Addie, how did you go about getting your job at Douglas, again, re-entering?
Well, I knew that the owner of the upholstery shop I was working in was going to retire, and the new owners were going to do all the work themselves. So that meant I was going to be out of a job again. So I went out to Douglas and put my application in. In the meantime, I had heard that this woman lead, Alice, had returned to work and was again the lead. So I contacted her and asked her to put in a good word for me, and she said, give me your application, they're hiring. So I met her out in the parking lot one morning and gave her the application, and a few days later I was hired. So I went right from the upholstery job back to Denver.
What was did you have any kind of interview or processing?
Well, yes. They asked me what I'd been doing and if I wanted to go back in the same department, and I had to have a complete physical again, and it wasn't near what it was before because they had all my records. And, of course, they wanted to know what I was doing all the time I was off. And I had to have references for the time I was off. Other than that, it was very simple. And about a week later, they called in this friend. Now I'm very close to up in Kernville. And so we were the only two women on swing shift. I went to work on swing shift.
And both of you had worked during the war?
Well, yes, she didn't work very long, but because her husband went to Oak Ridge, and she went with him. And she was still friendly with both Alice and me, so made it a very nice little coop that we were in.
Now, you went back to the same job that you'd had during
same
the war?
Same job, uh-huh.
And what about your pay and your seniority?
Oh, well, my seniority was deflected because that was 4 years between jobs. So I was the top woman other than the lead.
When you left?
When I went back.
When you went back.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying you went back with some seniority?
No. When they hired other women, I had was hired ahead of them. So that there was no one ahead of me except the lead woman. And well, then there was one man and the lead man. The lead man was the service man. And he was a friend of, he had graduated in the same class as my niece had in Huntington Beach. And I knew a lot of the same people that he did. And he wanted me to work for him so he could talk to me sometimes to find out what was happening to some of his schoolmates. And everybody used to wonder how come he talked so much to me when he didn't talk that much to any of the rest of them. And I said, well, it's merely because I know the same people he does. And I refresh his memory on some that he had kind of forgotten and updated him on what they were doing. So that was the way it went.
What was your pay like compared to what you were making when you left at the end of the war?
Oh, it was more. I started in during the war at 55 cents an hour, I think it was, maybe 65. 65, I think it was. I had it down once. Mm-hmm. And when I went back to work, it was $1.25 an hour.
But what were you making when you left in 46? Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. $1 an hour. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I went to work in the upholstery shop for $1 an hour, but there were no raises there. I was still working for $1 an hour. However, the fact that I got my transportation at the upholstery shop and Sundays on the boat with my son and everything, I felt that I was making more. And so going back at $1.25 an hour was wonderful. And then, of course, we got raises, adjustment raises as things went on. And then in 1951, I think it was, they had that strike. And I didn't go out on strike. I took a vacation. I took a 4-week vacation. And in that time, well, I did sewed at home and did what I could get to do, worked in the plumbing shop and run errands. So I think they were out about 7 weeks. And a week before the strike was over, I went back in. They called me up, wanted to know if I wanted to come back to work, and I said yes. So they told me I better come on days, since the transportation was what I could get on days, but I couldn't get it at night. So I did.
Were there any repercussions around you breaking the strike?
Oh, no, not to me. No, nobody ever said anything. And after the strike, there were some of them that called me a scab. Well, they didn't know that that paycheck was something I needed. I still had a boy at home, and I needed that money. I didn't even have my place paid for. So I had to have money, and I knew that they wouldn't give it to me. They weren't handing out. They were having soup lines and all that. But that's it. And I had to have money. I had to pay my bills, and I paid them. And while those union men who knew me, they told me I should join again, and it would all just blow over, because they knew that I wasn't against the union or anything like that. But I had my right to speak up. And they were very nice, and I did join the union again.
Were you ever involved with the union at that point?
Not
going
really.
To meetings or those kinds of things?
Oh, I really never went to any meetings. I used to go to their Bible class, but that's all. And they had, nothing was ever said about the union there.
You said that the union was different after the war than before the war.
It was. They were more open about things. And like this one man, who was a steward, and he said that women just weren't worth all these raises. And then he later absconded with $10,000. He wouldn't give me a chance at a raise, nor would he put in for me elevation and job. But after he left, and that was before the strike, or at the time of the strike. Then things got better. Things were different after that strike. There was no more of this being afraid to speak out. That was it. I've been to several of the meetings there at the Union Hall, and they are different than they were right during the war and right after.
How are they different?
Well, like I said, more out in the open with things, and they seem to be a different, a better class of. I wouldn't say class, I would say a more understanding, a type of the personnel in the union office. That's it.
Were very many of the women that worked, that came into work during the early 50s, had very many of them worked during the war? That you knew of?
Well, a few of us, but the percentage was higher of not working than it was for working. Most of them, after the war, were married, either wanting to get away from home or their husbands were in the service. Still in the service, and they wanted contacts outside of the home. Let's say, yeah, it's not good contacts, really. Not the type that they should have been looking for. Most of them, I don't say all of them. Some of them really had to work. Like I did. Some of them really and truly needed the money and had to work. But the majority of them were looking for contacts outside, let's say, boyfriends, a new husband, or something of the sort. I wasn't in that bracket either. 'Cause I never went with any of them on the same payroll, never.
Were the attitudes on the job different in the early 50s than they were during the war?
Oh, very different. And when we were during the war, we were strictly for production, and nothing else but for production. But after the war, I could see a tendency to kind of play around. The rules weren't as strict, and during the war, the rules were real strict. We didn't go out of the department without a pass. After the war, it didn't make any difference, and they'd go from building to building without a pass, and. No one ever turned a job down saying they didn't want to do it during the war. After the war, when I went back, they didn't want to do this. They didn't want to do that. They were kind of picky. So, yes, it was different.
Were there any conflicts between the new women and the women that had worked during the war? Or any hard feelings around women that had worked before?
I don't think so. I don't really think so. I never felt any. Those women that were younger sort of stayed with the younger people, and us older women sort of got the message, and we stayed in our groups.
What about minority workers during the 50s, the early 50s, when you went
back? Oh, yes, there was lots of, there was, wasn't so many colored as there were Mexican, but Spanish. But as after the strike in 1951, then more colored came in, a lot more. And then in the 60s, they became conscious of this right to work, and they colored would go around and count the number of minorities there were in the department and want to know why more weren't in there. Well, they put them in there, but they never seemed to stay. They just didn't stay. The Spanish stayed, but the colored didn't. We had quite a few colored working in our department. But for some reason or other, they transferred to other departments. They just didn't stay in ours. There was no reason, because they were treated equally. As a matter of fact, I bought a new toolbox there in the 50s, and I wanted something a little bit better. And when I got it in the department, why, I gave my old toolbox to a colored boy. He asked for it, and I gave it to him. So, and we had one colored woman in assembly, and she was real nice. She got pregnant, and we gave her a party, gave her all the clothes and the high chair and the stroller and bassinet. We gave her everything when she had to leave. And then she came when the boy was about 7 years old, but she came back. And she was still very nice. No, people are the same, no matter where you find them. The color of your skin or the color of your eyes doesn't make that much difference. Not to most people. So, there wasn't all that much difference. During that Watts riot, I think there was a little dissension. But that's only because what the colored were doing to themselves. But it wasn't the whites against the colored, it was the colored that were doing it all.
There was talk about it at the plant during that time?
Not much. Very little discussion of it. Like I said, for the most part, there wasn't very much time to do visiting. There was only that 10-minute break where we went to the restroom twice. Once between the starting time and lunch time and quitting time. So there just wasn't that much time for visiting. And there was too much noise to talk back and forth between machines. The machines weren't that close together. Maybe if we set a part down on the table between welds while we were cleaning the electrodes, we might have a word to say, but mostly it was about our own families. One little girl had two children she was trying to raise alone. And that's all she talked about, those children. And I guess maybe I must have done the same thing, because that was what was in her heart. So. And that was it.
What was thinking about retirement like for you?
It was going to be wonderful. I knew that I wouldn't have an awful lot of money, but the fact that I was getting so tired, it used to feel like my legs didn't even belong to me. Start walking in from the parking lot to the job, and then of course we had to stand all the time we were working, and I was just tired. And I thought, well, when I retire, I can at least get up when I want to and take my time when I go shopping. I can at least have a little social life. That was the most. Having somebody to talk to, somebody to go around with, and that was it. And I did have my sister until 1972, when she fell on the stairs and broke her arm and died from that. So it was just looking forward to time when I could have social contacts. And then, of course, after I moved down here, there was plenty of social contacts. I got into senior citizens, and they have cards after a meeting, and well, people just like me, they're looking for social contacts too, and we just sort of gravitated together, and we go places together. We go on trips to Las Vegas, Reno, Pacific Northwest. I've had a lot of them.
What's your health been like since the war?
Oh, good. And I've always had fairly good health. It's never, of course, I have a lot of trouble with my throat. But, whatever. I guess getting old is just one of those things.
What kind of trouble with your throat?
Well, get hoarse a lot, and if I get a sore throat, it usually winds me up for the terrific fever, and I don't have any well real cough, but just kind of a hack now and then. But generally, my health's pretty good. I've got arthritis in my spine. Well, what brought that on, I don't know. And I have high blood pressure, which I have to take medication for, and will the rest of my life. But other than that,
you mentioned your hand as well.
Oh, yes. that's arthritis. When I take the medication for my arthritis in my spine, it also takes it out of my hand.
How long has your hand been bothering you?
Oh, it's been bothering me. Well, when I was still working, I went to the doctor there for a while. I thought maybe I might have broke something in my hand. And so I went to the doctor, and he x-rayed it, and he told me that I had arthritis. Now, this is the bone doctor, he said, how close are you to retirement? And I told him, oh, about 3 years. And he said, well, I can get you off on disability. And I said, no way. But I'd rather go on and keep working until I get my retirement, and then that's it. So, About three years before I retired, I began, this thumb would swell up so. And he said there was nothing much you could do about it except take aspirin. But after I'd had a couple of attacks of arthritis in my spine, this doctor gave me the medication that does help. takes it away, well, for a while, but it comes back, and as long as I'm not really and truly off my feet, why get upset about it? I'm not one of those people that like to take medication anyway. I'm not a pill popper.
Did we talk about menopause? Did you tell me that you'd had radiation?
I think I was, between that time, I think it was while I was off work, off Douglas, between Douglas and reemployment, and while I was still working in the upholstery shop, I began and I menstruated all the time. There was just no let up, and so I went to a doctor, and he gave me two X-ray shots. Well, I guess you'd call them shots. Treatment. And after that, I just didn't menstruate anymore. That was it. And if there was any repercussions there, I didn't know it because I never had hot flashes or I just kept right on working all the time. There was no days when I was really sick. So that was the end of it.
That's great.
It was very easy.
When you were younger, in the early part of the 1900s, were you aware of the suffrage movement?
The what?
The suffrage movement, the movement for women to get
yes.
the vote.
Oh, yes. It was a Carrie Nation that was against
alcohol.
She beat up a saloon or something. Yes.
That was
and she was,
movement.
Oh yes, and the right to vote, the women's vote, that came in, I think that came in around 1910 or 1912, I don't remember. I don't remember dates, you know.
Was there ever activity that you were aware of around that or talk about it, your mother or you,
yes,
your friends?
There was some activity going on because a lot of women came to the house and they would have meetings and talk about this, and my mother would talk about it with my father at the table with all the family sitting. We all heard everything she had to say, and we got his reaction too. He thought it was all right for women to vote, and he thought it was all right for women who had to hold a job. And he insisted that my sister and I have a bookkeeping and a training, and someone feels where we could go to work. He said every woman should have her own money, and she should keep it. And he thought that it was right that she shouldn't have to work in a home just doing housework. He thought being out working other places was all right too. So we got a pretty good view of, and it was especially good for my brothers because my brothers brought their paycheck home and turned them over to their wives, and when they wanted any money, they asked for it. Yes, it was a two-way street there.